Boker Tov, everybody. Erev Tov, wherever you are. And Shavua Tov, everybody as well. Getting ready for Purim. We should have a Yemei Simcha. Really, we need another Purim. We need a Revach Vatzala Yamot Miyutim. And I think it is going to be Mimakom Acher. But wherever it should come from, hopefully we should have the days of Adar should be days of Simcha. So we all know we need it more now than we've needed it for a while. Okay. I want to thank our sponsors of today's class, our good friends, Sarah Avihar, Estella Berman, and Lily Fetter. I tried to do that in alphabetical order. Three sisters who are sponsoring the class today in loving memory of their father, Mayor Cronenberg, Mayor Ben Avram Zal. May his neshama have an aliyah and be blessed with good health and long life. We want to thank you them for all their ongoing support and participation in so many of our classes in Torah Motion. It's a pleasure to have you and enjoy the learning. And we should have the neshama. We should have many, many occasions to celebrate good times. Okay, Rabbi Liebtag, we're going to go part two. When did the story of Megillat Esther take place? Vakasha.
Okay. Thank you, Rabbi Jay. Welcome. In case people don't know, Rabbi Jay is in Florida, but he was stranded.
I agree. There are worse places to be stranded, but
not due to a snowstorm.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Vakasha.
Okay. Let me share my screen. And as Rabbi Jay mentioned, today is it's not sharing. Let me try again. Share my screen. Here we go. Okay. Today's class number 4. And when did the story of Purim take place? 4 after the Second Temple. So last week, we followed what we call the academic approach, taking into account outside sources. And we followed all the accepted chronologies of the Persian kings and all the secular books that has like 8 Persian kings. And therefore, the most logical place to put Ahasuerus of the Megillah, he was king after King Darius and before Artaxerxes. And that puts him right where he fits, according to Tanakh as well. And if that's the case, the story of Purim took place after the Second Temple was built. In light of that fact, based on outside history and based on simple pshat of Tanakh, if the temple was built, if the story of Purim happens after the temple is built, it means now it should the Jews have returned to Israel, they have no more excuses of not returning. And it's happening a generation after the prophecies of Zechariah, which were given in the second and third and fourth year of Dariavesh. And then when you read the Megillah, assuming that the author of the Megillah is assuming that the readers of his work are aware of the prophecy of Zechariah and aware of the events that's recorded in the book of Ezra about the Jews returning and aware of Yirmiyahu, etc., it gives much deeper meaning, or so it helps uncover the hidden meaning of many events in the Megillah, why Esther is called Esther, etc., and things like that. And just a quick review. And out, this is the list of Persian kings in all the history books. So Koresh is in 538. I'm sure you've seen the date. Cambyses is not mentioned in Tanakh, but he's king for a couple years between Cyrus and Darius. King Darius is king for many years. Darius the Great, the big battle of Marathon in 492. And Xerxes, Ahasuerus, is king between Darius and Artaxerxes after the battle of Marathon. And if we follow Herodotus, Xerxes launches a massive attack against Greece and loses in the 6th or 7th year of his reign in the Battle of Salamis, which sort of fits the exact same time period when Haman gets into power. Anyway, that was if we follow the outside sources. And that was last week's share. Today's share, we do the opposite. Today, I want to appreciate the rabbinic approach. I want to first follow how it came about, what's the logic behind it, and why it became accepted. So, it's a midrashic historical approach based on Seder Olam, which we're going to return today. And in Seder Olam, we put Ahasuerus before Darius, which doesn't fit into simple pshat of Tanakh, but can fit if you sort of squeeze things a little bit, which we're trying to do today. And if we follow Seder Olam, Ahasuerus is before the Second Temple was built. It's still after the Cyrus decree, and therefore it was still after the Jews should have returned, and therefore all the so-called latent Zionistic messages or allusions in the Megillah still apply, but I couldn't use all the sources from Zechariah to explain why Mordechai is called Yehudi and why the fast days turn into feast days and the Minigim of Purim that we did last week. But still, we're going to try to explain what's the internal logic of Chazal's approach in Seder Olam. And the most important thing I want to do today, I want to explain why it's so widely accepted in our Jewish tradition. In other words, everyone learning in any Jewish yeshiva, any Jewish, other than modern places, any classic traditional Jewish education, Esther takes place before Darius. In fact, Darius is, in Jewish tradition, is the son of Queen Esther and Ahasuerus, and that's why Lasman filled the Beit HaMikdash, and all the Midrashim you're all probably familiar with. So what I want to do first part of this year, it's a review of what we did a couple of years, about a year or two ago in Torah in Motion. We had a series on from Cyrus to Balfour, and we did this more in detail. I want to give a quick review, maybe it might be helpful to review, and try to understand how the rabbinic approach came about and why it's so accepted and why it's so meaningful. Now, in the rabbinic approach, Seder Olam, there's only three Persian kings. There's Koresh, Ahasuerus, and Dariavash. There's Koresh we know about. According to rabbinic tradition, Koresh is king for only 3 years. Got it? Ahasuerus is king for 14 years. We'll explain why. And Dariavash, who is Artaxerxes, is king for 34 years. And according to rabbinic tradition, the year Tanakh ends, or the year after Tanakh ends, is when Alexander the Great begins his conquest of the Middle East, of Elam. Next, the Medes, and 6 years later, he finishes the conquest of Paras and Medai of all Persia. That's classic rabbinic tradition. It's found in the Talmud. It's found in Seder Olam. In every art school history book that you're going to read. I want to explain where it's coming from today and the logic behind it. So I want to review now how we explain Seder Olam back in that series. My main assumption, and I'll try to keep it as simple as possible because I think it's really simple. In fact, when you look at it carefully, I think it's even elegant what the rabbis did. The Tanaim, the early Tanaim, living in the late Second Temple period, are living in a time period where everyone around them is using the Greek year called the Seleucid year. The rabbis refer to it as Minyan Shtarot. It's mentioned in the Talmud. It's in all our Jewish tradition. The Jewish year that everyone is using in the time of the Tanaim and Amoraim and Gaonim is only the Greek year for good reason. There's no Jewish king. There is no Jewish year. And you need a year when you write any type of document, any shtar. That's why it's called Minyan Shtarot. Shtar is a document in Hebrew. Any official document to be kosher needs a date, and a date requires a year. I need a year that's viral that everyone's using. So for technical reasons, all Jews during the Greek time period and afterwards with the Roman time period and afterwards the Byzantine and then later under Islam rule, everyone is using the Greek year because that's what everyone's using. It becomes international and you need a year that's viral that everyone's using. Now, my assumption is even though the rabbis have no choice but to use the Greek year, it would be really nice if the Greek year was actually a Jewish year. So what I think they did, and I'm going to try to prove that now, I'm going to review that, is they did a beautiful midrash to turn the Greek year to a Jewish year. How do we do that? If we don't have a Jewish king, like we had during the time of the First Temple period, I want to go back to our counting system in Chumash. In Chumash, we count everything to the Exodus. Soon we're going to have Parshat HaChodesh in a week or two. Our months we count to the Exodus. Our years in Chumash we count to the Exodus, the first line of Sefer Bamidbar. Remember, it's the second year from the time we left Egypt till in the first day of the second month, start Sefer Bamidbar. In the end of Sefer Shemot, in the year that we leave Egypt, and the second year we leave Egypt, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The book of Deuteronomy, Sefer Dvarim, begins in the 40th year of Yisat Mitzrayim. Later we see when Shlomo builds the Beit HaMikdash and Sefer Melachim, it's in the 480 years after we leave Egypt. It only makes sense that we should count to the Exodus. That's the beginning of our national history. It's the year we got the Torah. And therefore, counting to the Exodus is the best Jewish year you could have. Now, the problem is no one was counting to the Exodus. We don't have anyone doing that in our rabbinic literature early on. But everyone's counting the Greek year. So somewhere during the time of the Tanaim, they came up with a beautiful midrash to turn the Greek year into a Jewish year. How do you do that? We want the Greek year to be equivalent to 1,000 years after the Exodus. Is that nice? Yeah, got the idea? Once we do a calculation and we can show midrashically that the Greek year equals exactly 1,000 years from the Exodus, then all I need to do when I write a Greek year, is add a little alpha, like a little 1K. And we'll see, the Gemara talks about that. That was a minhag of many Jewish scribes. They would write the Greek year and put a little alpha, a little aleph there, or standing for 1,000. And therefore, every Greek year now becomes a Jewish year. Now, what do we do nowadays in our Jewish year? We do it in Hebrew. Remember, it's Tavshin. We did in English, it's 5783, but in Hebrew, it's Tavshin Pei Gimel this year, right? But we dropped the hay. It's really hay, but we dropped the thousands because we don't live 1,000 years. We live Admei Esrim. So the thousands are irrelevant in our day-to-day life. We just count the hundreds. Now, and therefore, if I add 1,000, it wouldn't change anything because we only use the hundreds anyhow. Now, how do we do the calculation? It's so simple. Look how simple it is. Assuming we leave Egypt is year one, okay? We have a pasuk in Sefer Melachim in the beginning. In fact, maybe we'll take a look at it. We'll look at the psukim in a minute. In Sefer Melachim chapter 6, it says explicitly the Shema builds the temple in year 480 of Yitzhak Mitzrayim to the Exodus. From Shlomo's kingdom till the first temple was destroyed, we can calculate all continuous years in Sefer Melachim. Because Sefer Melachim keeps account from king to king, how many years he reigned for, and what year of the previous king he began his reign. And you can calculate the years, it comes out to 410. It's real easy to do. And then from the end of the first temple, from the time the temple was destroyed until the second temple was built, or begins its building, in the second year of Dalyavesh, we know from Pasuk in Zechari, it's 70 years. Three real simple sources, all based on Psukim. Now, if I add those years up, the second year of Dalyavesh, which we talked about a lot last week, is 960 Yitzhak Mitzrayim. There's nothing there to argue about. Let's take a quick break, and I'll show you the Psukim. Let me just one more time in the chat. One second. Someone said elegant. I said elegant. Someone said elegant. What the rabbis did, but right or wrong? Oh, okay. So I want to show you why they're right. Why they're right thematically, even though they might be wrong historically. You'll see what I want. I want to explain the logic of how the rabbis saw history, the way I understand it. Now let's go back to Achumash. Tanakh, let me open up the Tanakh real fast. And Numbers, there we go. Let's open up the book of Devarim just to show. In the 40th year month, in the 40th year when we leave Egypt, Vayibar Vayimshana. The first book of Bamidbar, real quick, just to show you what I was talking about. Bachad l'chodesh, b'shana shenit metzeta meretz Mitzrayim. Chumash is only counting to the Exodus. That's it. Let's take a quick look now in the book of Kings, chapter 6. Shlomo is about to build a mikdash. Opening line. Vayi b'shmonim shana b'arbamot shana. Year 480, just by saying it's 12 times 40.
Menachem, we're not seeing it. Are you making?
Oh, wait. My mistake. Yeah, I didn't share my screen. Thank you for reminding me. Share screen. Okay, let's go back. Sorry about that. Thanks for reminding me. Here, Sefer Melachim. Aleph, in the 80th year and 400, 480. Again, just by chance, 40 times 12. From the time we left Egypt, in that month, the Shema built the Mikdash. And all through Sefer Melachim, every time we have a new king, let's pick any random perek. Let's pick a better one. 16 here. That's we want a Jewish. We want a king of Judea. Okay. Here. 12 year of I'm not sure what Soviet king being. He was king for 52 years. That was we have all the kings, how long they lived for, who was the king beforehand, and we can do all that calculations in Sefer Melachim. And finally, the main verse. We use today in Zechariah chapter 1, verse 12. This is not a prophecy. This is a prayer. And what Zechariah says, as Abatai lo terachem et Yerushalayim et Arei Yehuda, asher zamta zeh 70 shana. Zechariah is saying, it's been 70 years since the temple was destroyed. And he's saying that in the second year of Dayavesh. So the second year of Dayavesh is 7 years after the temple was destroyed. So let's go back to our chart real fast. What's in our chart? Our chart is, there we go. Got it? 480 is explicit in the Book of Kings. Another 410, we can calculate from the Book of Kings. And Zechariah is saying 70. Therefore, the second year of Dalyavesh is 960. Now, what's the problem? I want to get to 1,000, but I'm in the second year of Dalyavesh. Now, but I need to take care of the rest of Tanakh. What happens in Tanakh? I have Dalyavesh, and then I have, we'll see in a minute, then I have a break. We'll see in the book of Ezra in a minute. And then I have Artaxasta. And then there's basically no way I can calculate it in Tanakh. So if I have Tanakh alone, there's no way I can calculate the years. But there's not enough sources in the book of Ezra or in any of our biblical literature of the Second Temple period. We cannot build a timeline. Whether that was intentional by them being or not, you could argue. But there's not enough information in Tanakh to build a timeline. You can do it for the First Temple period. You can't do it for the Second Temple period. But the rabbis have to make an assumption. So look, watch what they do. Here's going to be our sources, and we'll go back to this chart in a minute. Okay? We're going to make two bold assumptions. There's going to be no gap between chapter 6 and 7 of Ezra. We'll see in a minute. And when Tanakh ends is when Greek history begins. We have to show by both these assumptions don't match either Pshat of Tanakh or Pshat of history, but they're logical if I want to get to the year 1000. So watch what happens. Let's open up the Tanakh again. And actually, first, before we do that, I want to talk about the gap between Koresh and Dalyavesh. Koresh, for sure, is the first Persian king who conquers the Babylonian Empire. That's an explicit verse in the book of Ezra we read last week. The first year of Koresh, exactly when Yirmiyahu's 7 years are over. And when they come back to the book of Ezra in the second year, in this, when they return, they try building the temple. It doesn't get off the ground. And that's, the details are in chapter 4. The local population, when the Jews arrive, see the Jews are starting up this temple. And the Intifada starts. They start complaining. They want to join. Zerubbabel doesn't let them join with them. They get into a big fight. And the local population, the local population is giving us a hard time, scaring us from building. They hire lobbyists against the Persian authorities. From when? From the reign of Koresh when we return, the small group that did return, and try to get the temple off the ground, there's a building freeze until the reign of Dalyavesh, King of Paras. But we know in the second year of Dalyavesh, we begin building the temple. Now, Chazal come and say, what changed? What allowed us to build the temple in the time of Dalyavesh? Because who's the king between Koresh and Dalyavesh? Ahasuerus. Now, look at the next pasuk in Ezra, how complicated it is and how ambiguous it is. We're talking about a gap from Koresh to Dalyavesh where there's a building freeze. And then we're told, Uvamachut Ahasuerus, during the reign of Ahasuerus, in the beginning of his reign, they wrote a hate letter about the Jews in Yudah and Yerushalayim. And then it stops, like a cliffhanger. And then the book moves to Aramaic and talks about a different king, Artaxasta, but not a topic for today. So I can either say that verse 6 is the gap between Koresh and Dalyavesh. That's logical, isn't it? I said there was a building freeze from Koresh till Dalyavesh, implies there's a king in between. And who's the king in between? Ahasuerus. And the beginning of his reign, they stopped the building, which already indicates that Ahasuerus was a bad king from the very beginning. Wasn't so good for the Jews. Now, if I could do that. When I compare this to outside lists, outside sources, it makes more sense that the verses are going in order. There was Koresh, in between is Cambyses, and after Dalyavesh is Xerxes, and afterwards is Artaxerxes, Artaxasta. But that's if I look at outside sources. If I only have Tanakh, it's possible to say that this Ahasuerus is the king between Koresh and Dalyavesh. And that's what Chazal are going to do. Now, the question is, can Ahasuerus fit between Koresh and Dalyavesh? Got it? In other words, if that's true, can Koresh fit between Koresh and Dalyavesh? Now, the rabbis are going to do a calculation, which is really simple. It sounds complicated. I'll try to keep it as simple as possible. Again, the book of Ezra doesn't say how many years passed between Koresh and Dalyavesh. But the rabbis, based on Psukim, can calculate it. Why? We know that the first year of Koresh is 70 years after Babylonian rule began. Now, watch what the rabbis are going to do. The rabbis are going to go to the book of, one second, they're going to go to the book of Yirmiyahu and simply read chapter 25. Yirmiyahu chapter 25 is a famous chapter because it's when Yirmiyahu begins, it's his prophecy of the 70 years of Babylonian rule. And the chapter begins as follows. This was the word of God to Yirmiyahu. In the fourth year of Yehoiakim ben Yoshiyahu, which is the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel. This verse is an anchor for all biblical dating because we have a Jewish king, which is linked to all the kings of the first temple period, and an outside date, the first year of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, why is the Navi giving a double date? Usually in the book of Yirmiyahu, we have the dates of the Jewish kings only. Why am I giving the date of a Babylonian king? Because later in the chapter, after rebuking the people, okay, he goes, you didn't listen to me. Therefore, God says, because you didn't listen to me, what's your punishment? God's going to take, appoint Nebuchadnezzar to be a shalich, to be his emissary, or basically his eved, his servant, to punish Am Yisrael for not listening to God. And then what's he say? The Babylonians will be sovereign over the Middle East, not just over Israel, over all the nations of the Middle East for the next 70 years. And then, when the 70 years are over, I'm going to punish Melech Bavel for all the bad things they're going to do, and they'll be wiped out. That's what Yirmiyahu predicted. And therefore, in the book of Ezra, here we go, the very first line, in the first year of Koresh, which is exactly when Yirmiyahu's 7 years are over. Therefore, from the fourth year of Yehoiakim until the first year of Koresh, we know it's 70 years. That's 1 7 years, which is now what confuses people is that Yirmiyahu doesn't say there'll be 7 years of destruction or 7 years of exile. He says there'll be 7 years of Babylonian rule. However, Zechariah, we'll go to Zechariah now in a minute. Zechariah, who's talking in the second year of Daryavesh, we saw, in the second year of Daryavesh, he gives his nevuah, and he's saying that we saw before, he's praying that the temple should be rebuilt, and it's been destroyed for 7 years. So the second year of Darius, the Persian king, is 7 years after the temple was destroyed. Got that? Now, watch how the calculation works. It's as simple as could be. Let's get back to my screen. You can do the work on your own, but I wrote it here on the source sheet. How do I calculate the gap between Koresh and Daryavesh? So there's two sets of 7 years, Zechariah and Yirmiyahu's, right? Yirmiyahu 25:1, the first year of Bavel is fourth year of Yoakim. It's the beginning of 7 years that ends with the first year of Koresh. And Zechariah, 7 years from destruction to the second year of Daryavesh. Now, all I need to figure out is how many years are there from the fourth year of Yehoiakim to the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu. Got it? Well, that's easy. We know Yehoiakim reigned for 11 years. So in the 7th year of Bavel is the 11th year of Yehoiakim. Yehoiakim goes into exile right after a couple of months. And there's 11 years of Tzidkiyahu. So the 7 remaining years of Yehoiakim and the 11 years of Tzidkiyahu is 18 years. So there's an 18-year gap between the first year of Koresh and the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu, which means there's an 18-year gap between the first year of Koresh and the second year of Daryavesh. Hope that's clear? That's exactly the... we'll review it in a second. But there's 18 years between the fourth year of Yehoiakim, basically from the time Babel gets into power until the temple is destroyed is 18 years. And therefore, from the time Koresh gives his decree until the Jews actually get the temple started in the second year of Daryavesh is also 18 years. Now, therefore, in those 18 years, can I fit in Ahasuerus in the story of the Megillah? Because if Xerxes is before the temple is built, it's got to fit sometimes in those 18 years. But I don't have all those 18 years because there's at least 3 years of Koresh. Because in Daniel chapter 10, take a quick look. Daniel has a vision. Daniel chapter 10, real quick. Daniel chapter 10 is still there. In the third year of Koresh, the king of Paras, Daniel has a vision, and he has this famous vision, and he sees something about the upcoming rebuilding. Again, that's the topic for Daniel that Rabbi Shulman is doing with in detail. If you want details about all the Prakim of Daniel, simply listen to the Torah in Motion series. He's up to 15 classes already, I think, something like that. But we see from here, Koresh must be at least 3 years king. Got that? He can't be less than 3 years because Daniel has a vision in the third year of his reign. The second year of Dayavesh is 2 years into Darius. I have 18 years now that at least three belong to Koresh and at least two to Darius. So they can overlap a little bit. That gives me no more than 14 years. Agreed? I have 3 years of Koresh minimum. Then the king in between and the second year of Darius. That gives me no more than 14 years for the king in between. Could that be Achashverosh or not? Well, how many years are there in the Megillah? Let me undo this here. Undo this share here. Who can tell me how many years transpire in Megillat Esther?
12.
There's at least 12. Why? Because the book begins in year 3, doesn't it? Let's go over the events. I'm sure you remember them by heart. In year 3 of Achashverosh, the Megillah begins with the big party that lasts 180 days, and then a 7-day party at the end, just like Chanukah Tamishkan. In the 7th year of his reign is when Esther becomes queen. Correct? That says so. That's in chapter 2. In the 12th year of his reign, it's chapter 3. And in the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of his reign, he makes the lottery that falls out on Purim. Got it? Mm-hmm. And the next year, they send out another letter to keep Purim. So there's at least 13 years, more likely 14 years, of Achashverosh's reign in Megillat Esther. Can he fit or not? He can just fit. But what assumption we have to make? That Esther gave him a heart attack. No, I didn't say that. That he died the year that the Megillah ends, he died. Got it? In other words, if I want to fit Achashverosh into the gap, I have to assume that Koresh was only king for 3 years. Doesn't match any outside sources. But the last time he's mentioned in Tanakh is the third year of his reign. It doesn't mean he only reigned 3 years. It's the last time he's mentioned. Achashverosh, we mentioned at least 13 years of his reign, most likely 14, because they send another letter out the next year. But it doesn't say how many years Achashverosh was king for. But if I want to fit Achashverosh in the gap between Koresh and Dayavesh, I only have 18 years between them, 3 for Koresh, 2 for Dayavesh. That only leaves me 14, and no more for Achashverosh. What did the rabbi say? What I call bingo. It fits right in. Got it? I'll just summarize it on my source sheet. And then we'll take a look at the questions. Got it? From year 4 of Yoakim till is 11, and 7 is 18 years of Zidkiyahu. I have 3 years of Koresh in Daniel 10. There's a 14-year gap between for the king in between. And I go, bingo, okay, just enough to fit the events of Megillat Esther. Now, it fits so nicely. Now, we're going to go back to this and see how all the Midrashim about Megillah make this assumption, because it fits so nice. It fits perfect. If I don't look at any outside source and only have Tanakh itself, this can fit. Now, what's going to happen? We'll see in a minute what happens during these 14 years of Achashverosh's reign, and all the events of the Megillah match other events in Tanakh. Now, I'm going to go to this in a minute. What's the next thing they say? We know the second year, let me open up a Tanakh again. We know that, let me go back to the book of Ezra. Book of Ezra. What's the next assumption they make? In the book of Ezra, they start building in year 2. And we're told, we'll read the English instead of the Aramaic. In verse 13 and 14, let's just do the English now. V'shavi Yehuda Binyan, it's the elders of the Jews built and prospered thanks to the prophets of Haggai and Zechariah and thanks to the different Persian kings who allowed them to build. In verse 15, the house was finished on the third day of Adar, which is in the 6th year of the reign of Darius. So it takes 4 years to build. The last mention of Darius is year 6. It doesn't say he died in year 6. It doesn't say anything. It's just in year 6, we finished the temple. What should happen? There should be Mass Aliyah now, in theory. There's no reason not to come. The temple is built. There's no... And... And what's everyone waiting for? And what happens? The B'nai Gola make a big Passover. They make a dedication. That was an Adar. They make a big Passover that year. They make Chag HaMasot that year, B'Simcha. And things are going great. Now, for some reason, there's a gap in the book of Ezra between chapter 6 and 7. which is easy to remember because it's between year 6 of Darius and year 7 of Artaxerxes. The next event in Tanakh is what? This is chapter 6. Chapter 7 begins with the Aliyah of Ezra during the reign of Artaxerxes. Sebalbshad is a different name, is a different king. And then we're told Ezra makes Aliyah from Babel. In what year? They go up in year 7 of Artaxerxes the king. So the book of Ezra is jumping from year 6 to year 7. From year 6 of Darius to year 7 of Artaxerxes. What should happen now? What Ezra is doing is what should have happened right after, what should have happened, Mass Aliyah from Babel. That's happening in the time of Ezra. But it's a different king, and it's like, with outside history, it's like 50 years later. But for some thematic reason, the book of Ezra intentionally skips from the 6th year of Darius to the 7th year of Artaxerxes. I'll explain why I think why. The book of Ezra is continuing the theme of Dibrei Hayamim. In fact, it's all one, really one big book. And anything that doesn't deal with the Jerusalem being rebuilt is not recorded. What does the book of Ezra record? All the efforts to build the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. It talks about the Cyrus Declaration, the first wave of Aliyah under Koresh, with Zerubbabel and Sheshbazzar. And it talks about, and it skips from the building freeze in the time of Koresh until the second year of Dayavesh. It picks up when all the efforts to build the temple start up again in year 2, continues to year 4 and year 6, and simply talks about all the efforts done to build up Yerushalayim. The next major event that happens is Ezra's Aliyah. It's historically some 50 years later. But the book of Ezra skips it. And because the book of Ezra skips it, Sedra Lam's going to skip it. In other words, I have a basis for it. In fact, the book of Ezra is going to hide it, the missing years. And don't be surprised that the hidden time period between chapter 6 and chapter 7 of the book of Ezra is exactly the book called Hidden, or what's Esther Heidinger. That's Megillat Esther. Right? And therefore, exactly when Am Yisrael should have returned to Israel and to Yerushalayim, there's no reason for them being in exile anymore, is exactly when Megillat Esther is happening. And that's why all the Midrashim are alluding to, possibly, why we're almost destroyed, because, remember, God called upon his wife, or his nation, right, to show off his greatness to all the nations, and they don't want to come, and all the illusions we talked about last week. Okay. That was what we talked about last week, the hidden message of the Megillah. Going back to the rabbinic interpretation, once the book of Ezra skips those years, that gives license, at least, for the rabbis to skip the years. Now, I think they're aware that there's more time, but the midrashically, I can skip them, especially when it's convenient. Now, why skip the years? It's, what a coincidence, we go from year 6 of Darius to year 7 of Artaxerxes. So what are the rabbis going to say? It's the next year, and it's the same king. And then they make the statement that the names of the king, Babylonian kings are interchangeable. The Koresh can also, I mean, the Dariavish could also be called Artaxerxes. And therefore, Ezra came the next year, and there is no gap. Got it? With outside sources, the gap is some 50 years. With this book, I can claim there is no gap. If there's no gap, and Darius is Artaxerxes, let's go back now to our source sheet. And look how elegant it is. As I said the word before, if I'm using the word elegant the right way. Look how it works out to the T. I see there's lots of questions, so let me go. I'll get there in a minute. Let's see what happened. Here we go. I missed something here. Here we go. Back up here. Look what happened. If Darius is our Artaxerxes, then I have 33 more years in Tanakh. Why? Because the last event in Nehemiah is year 34 of Artaxerxes, who's Darius. Got it? If Darius is Artaxerxes, then I have 33 more years in Tanakh, because Tanakh ends in year 34 of Artaxerxes. And the 7 years began in year 2. I mean, it began in year 2. That gives me 33 years to the end of Tanakh. I had 1 year when Tanakh is over. And Tanakh, the year after Tanakh, is year 994 to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. I'm so close to the year 1000 now, right? Because I have at least 994. If I make the assumption that Daryavesh is Artaxerxes, and there's no gap between chapter 6 and 7 of Ezra, then Tanakh ends in year 994. Now I need 6 years to get to Seder Olam. What's the big and bold assumption of Seder Olam? 6 years after Tanakh ends, what do we find? That's when the Greek year begins. There's no basis in outside history for that at all. But that is what Seder Olam is going to do, because we want the Greek year to be a Jewish year. So I have to make a bold assumption now. Now is there no gap between chapter 6 and 7 of the book of Ezra, and Darius is Artaxerxes, but the year Tanakh is over is when Alexander the Great begins his conquest of Persia, right? And it takes 6 years to conquer Parasu Madai, and 6 years later begins Minyan Shtarot. Got it? So those are assumptions. There's no gap between chapter 6 and 7. The year Tanakh ends the year after Alexander the Great begins his conquest of Elam and completes it 6 years later. It's all in the Gemara in Daf 10 in Avodah Zarah. Okay. If that's the case, there's only room for three Persian kings. Daryavesh, who's Artaxerxes, must be the last king. Koresh is the first king. Ahasuerus is in between, and he fits in those 14 years. Therefore, Koresh has to be the first king, and he can only be king for 3 years. Right? Ahasuerus has to at least 13 years on the Megillah, and he fits into the 14-year gap in between. He fits between Koresh and Daryavesh, and Darius has to be Artaxerxes. And if that's the case, Greek year begins in year 1000, and that's the basis of all of our dating, of the whole dating system. Now, once I say that, and we saw the source and talks to see how it fits perfectly. Okay, we did the gap between Koresh and Daryavesh. Okay, we did all that. Now, if that's the case, watch what Seder Olam does for the events in Megillat Esther. What happens? Nebuchadnezzar remembers fourth year of Joachim, and Joachim's exiled in 11th year of Joachim. Remember, that's Joachim was king for 2-3 months and was exiled. And temple was destroyed 11 years later. I'm just doing, you can look at the, just doing the years. The Cyrus declaration is 7 years to Babel, which is the first year of Koresh. These are all the sources we just saw before. Ahasuerus begins his reign in year 3 of Koresh, right? Because Koresh is king for 3 years. And therefore, the big party is the third year of Ahasuerus, which is how many years after Galut Jehoiachin? 69. You see what the rabbis are going to do? I need a reason for the party. Now, the reason for the party, if you follow Herodotus and know outside history, the entire Persian army is about to march and cross the Bosphorus to attack Greece with ships. It's like the biggest army ever amassed. And that all begins in Shushan in year 3 of Ahasuerus. And that's, it looks like a party, but 180 days is when they're messing the army together. But in Megillat Esther, it's a party. Why? Because it turns out there's 69 years since the first wave of exile, not 70 years since the fourth year of Joachim. But I could possibly say that Yirmiyahu's 7 years might be referring to from the time of exile. It's a possibility, and that was Ahasuerus. Like the Midrash has Ahasuerus worrying about Yirmiyahu, and Yirmiyahu's 7 years being over. And it just turns out that the third year of Ahasuerus is 69 years since the 11th year of Jehoiakim. Therefore, what did the rabbi say? He was celebrating the fact that Beis HaMikdash wasn't rebuilt. And 7 years of Yirmiyahu were over, and the Jews didn't return, and he has to make a party, and the Jews joined the party. Again, that's totally Midrashic. But again, it's alluding to that hidden message of connecting the story of Megillat Esther to the fact that Jews didn't go back and build the temple and didn't keep Yirmiyahu 70 years. Now, and the story of Purim happens in year 12 of Ahasuerus, year 14 of Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus dies, Darius takes over, and the next year we build the temple and explains why the Jews can build the temple, because now Mordechai and Esther, running the Persian Empire, of course they'll let them build the temple. Of course, it turns out that Darius couldn't be more than 6 years old, because Esther got married in year 7 of his reign, so maybe he's 5-6 years old, which means the reason why he gave the okay to build the temple is because Mordechai and Esther are running the show. This table shows you the 18-year overlap we talked about before, but I don't want to keep things complicated. Now, let me take a break and look at the chat, and then we'll see Seder Olam inside. Let's check the chat real fast. Okay, the source sheets. Okay, that's so bad. Okay, that's good. Okay, when Darius was born. Okay. When was Darius born? Okay. When was Darius born? According to Tanakh, he had to have been born after Ahasuerus married Esther. From outside history, we know when he became king. I don't know if you know what day he was born. He was king in 522. He became king. You see, again, the outside historical dates don't fit this at all with Midrash. As I'm saying, this whole Midrash is Midrashic. My claim is all the Midrashim are rooted in the desire to make the Greek year a Jewish year, which I don't have to say they have to do that, but it's logical they did that. That's all. I'm saying there's logic in wanting the Greek year to be a Jewish year. The rabbis had a different understanding of history that we have. And it makes sense they would do something like that. Did they have to? No. But could they? For sure they could. No.
What's
I want to share with you. I brought an English.
What is the logic of making the Greek year a Jewish year? I don't understand that.
I can't prove they had to. What's the logic? I think it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? I call it, wouldn't it be nice? Would it be nice? Everyone's using the Greek year, right? It's viral. Everyone's using it. Wouldn't it be nice if the Greek year was really a Jewish year? So we built a beautiful Jewish custom that we add an aleph, we add 1,000 to the Greek year. And the Greek year is a Jewish year. And instead of counting to a Greek year, in essence, we're counting to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. I think it's a great minhag, isn't it? It's worth all the midrashim. I'm saying, you could say nowadays, it doesn't fit our understanding of history, which is much more exact. But I think there's logic to doing that. And it's a minhag that caught on. What's so bad about it? Especially when no one studies history day to day. We don't have organized schooling and textbooks of history. And it was a beautiful custom that the rabbis came up with midrashically. With that midrash explains lots of events in Megillat Esther beautifully. And the midrash goes viral, just like the Greek date went viral. And then it becomes the accepted date. Why? It's so nice and so elegant. Why mess with it? So I think that's the logic in doing it. I can't prove they had to do it, but there's logic that midrashically they came up with that approach. Now, so you have Seder Olam takes that approach and explains all the events in Megillat Esther. I took an English version of Megillat of Seder Olam. You can get it online. They say as follows. In the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that's the beginning of the 70 years that start right after Yirmiyahu. Then it says Cyrus ruled less than 3 years, because I need to truncate one of his years to fit into the 18. So it says Cyrus ruled only 3 years, and he proves it from the book that we saw in Daniel chapter 10. Okay. Then they quote the Pasuk in Ezra. We saw that Ahasuerus is between Koresh and Dariavesh. We saw those who came in Ezra chapter 4. In the meantime, the work on the temple was stopped until the second year of Dariavesh. We know that from lots of sources. He brings one from Ezra chapter 4. Now, in chapter 1 in Ezra, in the third year of Achashverosh's reign, he makes the feast. Got it? Which is, he goes back to 7 years, almost 7 years since the temple, since the first wave of exile. Okay. And then 4 years Esther was hiding in Shushan. That's why she wasn't married yet. And then she was taken to the king. And what happened? The Medrash has to explain, if the king dumps Vashti after the third year of his reign at the fast, why does he wait till year 7 to marry Esther? So say she was hiding. It took a while till he found her. Now, in the 7th year of his reign, Esther's taken to the king to become queen. Okay? And then in the first year, in the month of Nisan, in year 12, begins the story of Ahasuerus. Now, the 13th of Nisan is when the edict goes out. That's in chapter 3 of the book of Ezra. That's explicit. On the 15th of Nisan, then the 3-day fast has to be the 14th, 15th, and 16th. So they say, Chazal say on the 15th is when Esther comes to the king and they fast on Leila Seder. And Haman is hung on the first day of Chol HaMoed. We start counting the Omer. Now, what's amazing is that for some reason, the letters that undo the first letter doesn't go out to the 23rd it should be Sivan. That's a mistake there. It should be Sivan. Right there, Sivan, not Nisan. The second letter goes out on the 23rd of Sivan. So from the time the first letter goes out to the second letter goes out, these are the only two explicit dates we have in the Megillah other than Purim itself. The first letter goes out on the 13th of Nisan, and the second letter goes out on the 23rd of Sivan, which means there's 17 days left in Nisan, 30 days of Iyar, 23 in Sivan. There's 70 days where all the Jews are assuming their lives are on the line. They're all going to die. There's 7 days of peril between the first letter and the second letter. I don't think, in my opinion, that's not by chance. That goes to that 70 days, again, is alluding to the 70 years that they didn't answer. Yirmiyahu's called 70 years. So remember the idea of Yom LaShanah and Yom LaShanah. It's like we have the Chet HaMaraglim, where we're punished one day for every year. We have this similar idea where Am Yisrael sort of is in peril for 70 days, thinking they're about to be destroyed, which might relate to the 70 years of Yirmiyahu that didn't answer the call of. Anyway, it's one idea. Maybe, again, it's just coincidental. Then on the 13th of Adar is the story of we win the battle against our enemies in Shushan Abira on the next day. They hang the 10 sons of Haman. And then the same time the next year, Esther writes to keep the second letter. It's the end of Megillat Esther we read last week with the Dibrei Tzomot Bezakatam and Neshach Monot, etc. And now Sevelam is going to do is if Mordechai writes the letter and the next year Achashverosh dies, according to Sefer Olam, and the next year after that, because now Darius is king, they allowed the Jews to return. Now it's 70 years since the temple was destroyed. The second year of Da'yavish is now 7 years since the first temple was destroyed, as Zechariah mentions, and he quotes the Psukim in Zechariah and in Daniel. Now, if I follow that that logic, then there's 52 years, right, of Persian rule. How they are? What are they? From the time of the Cyrus Declaration, there's 3 years of Koresh, 14 of Achashverosh, and the second of Darius, they build the temple. So there's 18 years before the temple is built. And if Darius is Artaxerxes, there's 34 years during the temple being built, which is Darius and Artaxerxes, who is the same king. So the temple was built for 4 years, chapter 6 in Ezra. And then what happened? At the same time of year, the next year, Ezra makes Aliyah. Now it's in Ezra chapter 6, it takes year 6 of Darius to build the temple. Year 7, Artaxerxes, Ezra makes Aliyah. It says, at the same time the next year, the Shana Acheret, Ezra makes Aliyah. And therefore, they say there's no gap between Ezra chapter 6 and 7. That's what we talked about before. Again, I'm just showing you it's all in Seder Olam. Now watch what happens. They bring Nehemiah, came in year 20, he fixes up the wall, he comes back in year 32 and comes back 2 years later. Okay. So basically, Esther makes a statement. The kings of Prasa Madai ruled for 52 years. What are they? 18 before the temple was built and 34 after the temple was built until Alexander the Great came. So that's the 52 years in Esther Olam of Persian rule. 18 years before the temple, 34 years, which is the reign of Darius, who's Artaxerxes, after the temple was built. Now, Rabbi Yossi summarizes as follows. The Persian Empire, when the temple was built, was 34 years that we talked about. Then the Greeks come for 180 years. The Asmoneans for 103. The Romans for 103 from Herod till it's destroyed, a total of 420. And then they make the big statement. Okay? And after that, we count to the Korban and not to the Binyan anymore. And then it says, in Babylonia, we write the Seleucid year, we add 1,000. Notice this whole section in Seder Olam ends with the big statement. Our custom in Babel is when we write the Greek year, Seleucid is the Greek year, we add 1,000. Which proves my point that one of the goals of these years is not just to crunch the years, but to turn the Greek year into a Jewish year. And afterwards you have the Greek kings, and that's the end of Seder Olam. Now, let me just summarize that for a second. What I tried to show you, that was the main goal this year today. I want to show you the logic of why the traditional rabbinic opinion is so popular. Because it follows Seder Olam. The original motivation, in my opinion, of Seder Olam was to turn the Greek year into a Jewish year. In order to do that, I need to make these bold assumptions, but they fit. They're not pshat in Tanakh, but they can fit with Tanakh if I don't look at outside history. And because they fit, they go ahead and do it. And that becomes Seder Olam. It works out so nicely. Again, I have to assume the Koresh is going for 3 years. Achashverosh died the year the Megillah is over. And Alexander the Great comes the year after Tanakh is over. Those are bold assumptions which don't fit into Pshat at all. But they can fit. And if Seder Olam only takes into account the events in Tanakh, and that's it. And then, because it can fit, it does fit. And that leads to all the midrashic interpretations of the reason for the feast is 7 years of Yirmiyahu being over. He was up by a year, if you remember that midrash. It explains the Kelim Kelim Shonim, why they're being punished for that. It explains why they say that Esther's son is Darius, who allows them to build the temple, even though he's only 5-6 years old at the time. Now, how does that explain the Jewish year today, real quick? Which explains why we're going to go back and everyone has to accept the Seder Olam years. What happened? The Jewish people are using the Greek year, Chomnin and Shtarot, during the Tanaim, Amoraim, Gaonim, even in Bavel for sure. when the center of Judaism moved to Europe and were under the rule of the church, under the dominion of the church, no one is using the Greek year anymore. Everyone's using the Christian year, right? The year of their Lord, what they call AD, which we call CE, Common Era. Now, if I use Minyan Shtarot, that's fine. I can put that on a tombstone. I can put that on a star, et cetera, on a ksuba. That's fine. Because what I do basically is Minyan Shtarot is sort of, because of the Midrash, is actually a Jewish year. But I can't put the Christian year. That's blasphemous to count to their Lord. So I can't use the year that everyone else is using. We do it today because we need it for financial reasons. That's why we call it Common Era instead of the year of their Lord. We say CE instead of AD. But in Europe, when the Christian year started catching on, the Jews could not use it on their tombstones and on their shtarot. They need another year. They could have kept the Greek year, but no one else is using the Greek year. Now, they could have added 1,000 and turned to the Jewish year, the Tzet Mitzrayim. But because no one pays attention to the thousands, you're basically keeping the Greek year. So why keep up Greek tradition? So for a logical reason, they decide, let's keep the Greek year, but turn it into a year to creation. They're counting to their Lord, we count to our Lord. They count to their Bible, we count to our Bible. Got it? Now, they didn't have to, but it's clear what they did. Watch what they did. Again, it works to charm. How does the Greek year become our Jewish year? It's as simple as could be. I'll explain outside and we'll see it inside. No one changed the thing. No one's been calculating. Simply, the Greek year in our custom is 1,000 Tzet Mitzrayim. So all I need to do now is how many years is it from creation to the Exodus? Got it? I take creation to the Exodus. We'll find out how many years that is. I know how many years is from the Exodus because I take the Greek year plus 1,000. So what's the Jewish year? The years from creation to the Exodus plus the Greek year plus 1,000. Got it? Hope that wasn't too complicated. Let's just say it again to make sure it's clear. What's the year today? It's the Greek year plus 1,000 takes me back to the Exodus. And from creation to the Exodus, I have to add to that to become the year from creation. So that's what we do. How do I know how many years is from creation to the Exodus? Open up a Chumash. In chapter 5, I have genealogies from Adam to Noah. In chapter 11, I have the genealogies with all the years from Noah to Avram Avinu. I know that Yitzhak was born 100 years after Avram Avinu was born. And Yitzhak Mitzrayim is at least 400 years, no less than 400 years later. So let's look what happens. Let's look at our screen and look at how the Jewish year began, how its simple cap came about. The Greek year began in 312 BC that everybody knows. And therefore, today's Greek year is 2335. Got it? It's our Goyish year is 2023 plus 312. The Greek year is 2335. To notice, if we were still counting the Greek year, today's year would be 2335. You simply take the Christian year and add 312. That's not a chiddush, it's just what it is. Now, if I want to turn the Greek year to the Exodus year, I have to add 1,000. So therefore, if it's 2335 Greek, I add 1,000. And today's year is 3335 from Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Got it? Now, as we went to the West, we stopped using the Greek year. We moved to CE. And now we need to change our custom. How do we turn that? We decided, for logical reason, to dump the Greek year, and hence the Tzat Mitzrayim year, and move it to creation, but keeping the same idea. How do we calculate how many years it is from creation to the Tzat Mitzrayim? Well, the famous calculation that Avram was born in year 1948 is based on chapters 5 and 11 of Bereshit, just adding up all the years. Everyone knows Avram was born in 1948, which is an amazing coincidence. Yitzhak was born when Avram was 100, that's a verse, Avram ben Matshanabi Vela Yitzhak Beno. And Chazal count Brit Ben Avtari minimum from the birth of Yitzhak. Yodote Kiris Abretz Alem Arbamot Shana. It's at least 400 years minimum. And they say, which is 400 years. Even though Chumash says 430. So they say that's from Brit Ben Avtari, the famous Machloket, all the commentators talk about. But in Seder Olam, I'm assuming that Yitzhak Mitzrayim took place 2448 after creation. Now, what I do, if today's year is 3035 from the Exodus, I have to add 2448 to get to today's year. So what's today's year? Take the year to Tzat Mitzrayim, 3335, add 2448, and that's our custom today, 5783. All I'm trying to show you is that our Jewish year that we write on all of our shtarot, all of our ksuvas and our tombstones, etc., is based on Seder Olam, because it's taking the Greek year plus 1,000, which is our Exodus, and adding 2448 to it. Because they didn't start counting, didn't start recalculating to creation. They simply took the Greek year, added 1,000, and added 2448. And that's our custom since the last 1,000 years, is to count to creation, 5783. That's why on every shtar, it says, Leminan Shanu Monim. We open up any ksuba, it says, this year to Briat Olam, according to the convention that we're counting. Because we're not saying otherwise, if it's not historically true, then every ksuba would be puzzle. But that's why the date has a caveat and says, this is the date that we're using. It's our custom, it's our convention. We're not making a statement of truth that's the actual year. Okay. But remember, the calculation is based on the following assumptions. The assumption took place 400 years after the birth of Yitzhak. Got it? There's no gap between Ezra 6 and 7, which is Apshad. And the year Tanakh ended is when Alexander the Great came, and that for sure isn't, there's no source for that. Now, so I'm sure you're wondering why, what do you call it? What's with the Jewish year? What year is it? So that's the famous 160 years that are missing between. Whenever you look at the dates of Beit Sheni, there's always a contradiction between the 420 of Chazal, which we're all familiar with, and the 580 of outside history. So if you add 160 years to the date today, we're really close to the year 6000, which would be a little chilly if you know the Midrashim about 6000 years, but that to your kids. That's one part. There's lots of articles on, I want to get into the whole missing year part. Now, what happened? Once the Jewish year becomes accepted, got it? Once 5783 is there, everyone's using, and we've been using that for the last 1,000 years, that's rooted in Seder Olam. I hope that's clear. Our Jewish year is based on Seder Olam, which is based on all those Midrashic assumptions. Got it? Now, once that's the date I write on every Jewish document, then all the Midrashim de facto have to become history. And I can't say anything else. You follow? Once I claim that's the Jewish date, everything that Jewish date is based on can't be Midrash anymore. It has to be history. And I can't, I just think it's way too complicated for the average, you know, cheder bocher. You can't teach little kids this complicated things. The Jewish date, this is the date of creation. And therefore, I can't contradict that date in my Pirush of Tanakh. And therefore, all the Midrashic conclusions, which are only Midrashic, right? And definitely not Pshat, because those Midrashim are the basis for Seder Olam, and because Seder Olam becomes our accepted year once I move to creation, in our tradition, all those Midrashim de facto become history. And therefore Esther, what do you call it, is the mother of Darius, right? And Ahasuerus is the king after Koresh, and Ahasuerus' child is Darius, son of Esther. Got it? They have in all the books. The year that as Alexander the Great comes, the year after Tanakh is over. And by chain, it's only 420 years. And then there's Daniel 70 times 70 is the 490. It's just, everything fits so nicely. But it's all Midrashic. It all has Midrashic roots, but it doesn't fit outside history at all. I'm trying to explain why our history, why Jewish history followed Seder Olam, because of beautiful customs we began, the sort of forces to turn Midrash into Pshat. Got it? The custom to turn the Greek year to Jewish year makes a lot of sense. It's beautiful. It's logical. Right? And because of that Midrash, I can take the events of Megillat Esther and make Esther happening before the temple's built, between Koresh and Dayavish. And it fits perfectly. It just fits perfectly. But again, I have to say the Koresh is the only thing for 3 years and Achash only 14 years. It doesn't fit outside history. But if I don't look at outside history, it fits Tanakh perfectly. And then there's no more gaps in Tanakh and everything's accounted for. And it's so elegant and nice, it just became accepted in our Jewish tradition. That doesn't mean we're wrong. In fact, it means there's logic to our Jewish history, even though it doesn't fit with outside history. Because Chazal had a different understanding of history. But again, once the date became viral, counting to creation, which is based on Seder Olam, then all the Midrashim that build up that date become Jewish history. And that's why we teach our children Seder Olam as Pshat, that's all. I'm trying to explain how you can live in the dissonance between reading outside history that doesn't fit Seder Olam. Now, the outside history doesn't contradict Tanakh at all. Actually, outside, we saw last week, outside history and Tanakh fit perfectly. The Midrashic interpretation doesn't fit outside history. And now it could be, I was saying something deeper, it could be that because the Jewish history prefers Seder Olam because it's hiding our dirty laundry, or about it. And then if the book of Ezra is hiding those sad years when we should have made Aliyah and we didn't, so it could be the history hides them as well. And anything, any time that we didn't make an effort to come to Israel, we didn't, it's neglected in Tanakh, and therefore it's neglected in history. Like if you want to punish a child, just ignore him, which is worse than which is a bigger punishment than a punishment. You know, saying a certain time period didn't happen, which is a way of saying you didn't do what you should be doing. Maybe that's add-ons. I just try to explain the before and after. So last week's show was following the historical sources and the more Zionistic shot of why Megillat Esther is hidden and the allusions to why we're almost destroyed. And therefore, with the Mikdash being Megillah happening after the temple is built, and today we did the rabbinic tradition if it's before the temple is built, but again after Koresh. So I can still throw in the Zionism, but I'm trying to explain why the rabbis, why the historical opinions, which don't fit outside history, are so popular because of the Jewish state. Okay, I hope I didn't confuse you too much today, but I have to go over it a couple of times. Okay, and let's see the questions. We don't know when Darius born. Was the Rambam was still using the Greek here? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. In Yemen, they were using the Greek here to 100 years ago. 1900s, they're still using the Greek here. The Rambam uses the Greek here. The Greek here, they're using the Greek here because the Greek here is basically the Tzet Mitzrayim year. It became Jewish custom. Only in Europe, it caught on the Briat Olam year because you can't use the Christian year. Okay, just so we know who the mother of Darius the first, and there's Esther's not mentioned in outside history, and so fairy tales really can come true. Okay, okay. Anyway, thank you very much, Rabbi.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so with Purim coming up, and of course our speakers tomorrow morning, both living in Israel, it will be Purim already. So we're not actually having a Torah in Motion class online till Wednesday morning, Dr. Lindsay Guhart and Taylor. So I hope you don't have withdrawal, symptoms, but 2 days without Torah in Motion, I don't know. But, so everybody should have a wonderful Purim, but really, obviously, they can't go Monday night, of course. Mark Shapiro's class will be at Megillah, and Tuesday also doesn't really work for people, although Purim's a great day for learning Torah. Just we'll have other places to learn on your own, please God, and everybody should be well. Have a joyous Purim and good things, and thank you again for our sponsors, and they should have good memories, and we look forward to seeing everybody on Wednesday, and please God, we want to hear from you as we're in the middle of planning our Pesach programming. So any ideas you have or ideas for speakers, topics, we're always like to hear, from you, and just let us know. And we want to wish everybody a wonderful day and Purim Sameach. And if you live in Yerushalayim, we're still going to have class on Wednesday, but for those in Yerushalayim. But anyways, be well and have a great day and a great week. Bye-bye. Thank you. Okay.
Chag Sameach, everybody.
Purim Sameach.
Purim Sameach.
Ruth, how are you doing? It's Chaim.
Thank you, Chaim. Baruch Hashem.
How was your Shabbat after the critics?
I'm going to have to listen to the tape here. I see. Oh, my gosh. Okay. I don't know what I missed.
Oh, it's not the first time. Sometimes people get very abrupt about attacks on their preconceived notions.
Oh, that's okay. Okay. It means the people are listening.
I think, as I'm told to do, I made a typing error.
Yeah, I see. It should be AOL.com.
No, yes, and it's KROSSEL. Crossell. M. Crossell. K, I think I put in an extra T there, didn't I?
Oh, there's no, it's MK. Oh, it's at AOL.com.
MKROSSEL.
MKROSS.
Let me just type it again.
Yeah, type it again.
His last name, if you just click on his...
it's Kroos. It's K. Okay.
It's the last name. So yeah, that's just...
It's Marty...
M. Kroesel.
R-O-S-S-E-L. Okay. M. K-R-O-S-S... E-L. At AOL.com. Okay, good. M. Kroesel.
Okay.
I got it.
I can end. Everybody's fine. Any other comments?
Oh. Have a good day, everybody.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.